You feel fine. That's the first thing to understand about carbon monoxide poisoning in the cockpit. You feel fine, and then, slowly, you feel a little tired, a headache building behind your eyes. You figure it's the altitude, or maybe you didn't drink enough water before the flight. Your radio calls get a little sloppy, your scan slows down, you stop checking in with approach on schedule, and somewhere in that slow fade, you stop noticing that anything is wrong at all. That's not speculation. That's a pattern the National Transportation Safety Board has reconstructed from accident investigations spanning multiple decades. Pilots incapacitated not by mechanical failure, not by weather, not by any visible factor in the wreckage except for one thing: a cracked muffler and blood test results that told the full story after the fact. I'm Tower, and this is ATIS on Radio Hangar. Today's segment is one I want you to share with your flying partners, your co-pilots, your hangar neighbors. This threat is preventable. It's under-discussed relative to how many accidents it causes, and the fixed costs about what you'd spend on a headset cable. Today's program comes to you from AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins built to mark the milestones, discipline, and pride behind every step in flight. From first solo to airline transport pilot, every coin tells a story. AviationSoul.com. Let's start with what carbon monoxide is and where it comes from in your aircraft. Carbon monoxide is the product of incomplete combustion. When any carbon-based fuel burns without sufficient oxygen to complete the reaction, you get CO rather than carbon dioxide. Your aircraft engine produces it on every single flight. Under normal conditions, your exhaust system carries all of it overboard and it disperses harmlessly. That's what the system is designed to do. The problem is that your exhaust system is not a sealed static component. It's a metal assembly operating at extreme temperatures. The muffler canister, the exhaust manifold connections, the heat exchanger shroud. These components heat up during climb and cruise, cool partially during descent, then reheat on the next flight. Thermal cycling. Over hundreds of flight hours, that repeated expansion and contraction creates metal fatigue. Small cracks develop, seals at exhaust joints open slightly. And when that happens, combustion gas can escape before it reaches the tailpipe. On most light general aviation aircraft, that's where your cabin heating system becomes the delivery mechanism. The heat exchanger design in light piston aircraft is simple. Outside air passes over the muffler or exhaust components, picks up heat from those surfaces, and is ducted into the cockpit. Pull the heat knob, warm air comes in. The system is reliable and efficient when the exhaust components are intact. When a crack develops in the muffler, exhaust gas mixes directly into that heated airflow. The same duct that keeps you warm on a winter cross-country becomes the path that carbon monoxide takes into the cabin. This is not a single manufacturer problem. The Cessna 172 and 182, the Piper, Cherokee, Archer, and Warrior, the Beechcraft Bonanza, the Mooney Line. Virtually every light, non-turbocharged piston aircraft with cabin heat uses some version of this heating approach. The risk spans the entire light general aviation fleet. Now let's talk about what carbon monoxide does to your physiology, because this is where the threat becomes concrete. When you breathe CO, it bonds to hemoglobin in your red blood cells. The key fact here: carbon monoxide bonds to hemoglobin approximately 240 times more readily than oxygen does. Your blood preferentially picks up CO and carries it to your brain and tissues instead of oxygen. The medical measure for this is carboxyhemoglobin saturation, the percentage of your hemoglobin that's carrying CO rather than oxygen. At 5 to 10% saturation, you get headache, particularly at the temples, slight dizziness, mild nausea. Here's what makes this clinically dangerous. Those symptoms are completely nonspecific. They're identical to what a pilot might chalk up to dehydration, to fatigue, to the early effects of altitude. Pilots have rationalized these exact symptoms and kept flying. At 15 to 25% saturation, the effects intensify. Throbbing headache, confusion, difficulty concentrating, impaired judgment. And here's the truly insidious aspect. At this level, the CO is actively degrading your ability to recognize that the CO is degrading you. Your cognition is compromised, your self-assessment is compromised. You may be flying a deteriorating situation while genuinely believing you have it under control. Above 30% saturation, you're progressing toward unconsciousness. Above 50%, you're not flying the airplane anymore. And unlike hypoxia at altitude, which can have a rapid onset and produce a dramatic incapacitation, carbon monoxide poisoning creeps. It's gradual. The margin between feeling slightly off and being unconscious at the controls may span an hour or more. But that hour is a period where your judgment is already compromised, where your ability to accurately assess your own condition is degraded. That's the window in which accidents happen. There's one more physiological factor specific to the cockpit environment. Altitude, at sea level, your blood is close to fully saturated with oxygen under normal breathing. At altitude, your blood oxygen saturation is already somewhat reduced. add carbon monoxide to a system that's already working harder to maintain adequate oxygen delivery, and the effects compound. A CO concentration that might produce mild symptoms in a pilot at sea level can produce serious impairment in the same pilot at 8,000 feet. This altitude multiplier is part of why CO events in general aviation, which operates predominantly at low to moderate altitudes, still produce rapid incapacitation. There is a specific accident pattern that appears repeatedly in the NTSB's General Aviation Accident Database, and it's worth describing in detail. The aircraft is in cruise on a cross country, often on an instrument flight rules flight plan given the aircraft's capabilities. The pilot is on a long leg air traffic control issues, a routine call, and gets no response. They try again on the assigned frequency, then the emergency frequency, nothing. The transponder continues to paint on radar. The altitude is stable, the aircraft is on autopilot, and then it flies. For another hour maintaining heading and altitude, controllers watching a target on their scope, knowing a pilot is not responding. Every attempt to raise the aircraft fails. Eventually the engine quits, fuel exhausted, the aircraft impacts terrain. When investigators arrive, they find no structural failure, no weather encounter, no mechanical anomaly that explains the crash. What they find is a cracked muffler or a deteriorated heat exchanger seal. Toxicology shows carboxyhemoglobin saturation in the pilot at levels incompatible with consciousness. The aircraft was functioning. The weather was workable. The pilot was gone well before the last radio transmission. The NTSB has reconstructed this scenario from multiple separate accident investigations. Different aircraft types, different routes, different years, the same cause. The board issued safety alert, SA-019, specifically addressing carbon monoxide poisoning in general aviation. That document outlines the mechanism, the risk factors, and the recommended actions. It is available at ntsb.gov. It's a short read. Every pilot should make the time for it. So what do you actually do about this? Two categories of response, maintenance and detection. They are not interchangeable. You need both. On the maintenance side, the Federal Aviation Administration requires annual inspection of aircraft, including the exhaust system. But there's a fundamental limitation to annual inspection worth stating directly. A muffler that passes an April inspection can crack by November. Thermal cycling doesn't respect inspection intervals. Your mechanic will inspect what's visible and testable, will pressure test mufflers where feasible, will use a borescope where the procedure calls for it. Good maintenance catches a lot. It doesn't catch everything. Pilot involvement between annuals matters. During your pre-flight, examine the exhaust components you can access. Look at the joints and seams around the muffler and exhaust manifold connections. Look for black or dark gray sooting deposits at those connection points. Soot at an exhaust joint means combustion gases are escaping there. That doesn't automatically mean CO is reaching your cabin, but it means a component that should be sealed isn't sealed. That warrants a mechanic's assessment before the next flight. On the detection side, the argument is simple and the barrier to acting on it is extremely low. Portable carbon monoxide detectors for cockpit use are available for under $50. Many cost $30. Some mount on the sunshade with a Velcro strip and sample cabin air continuously. They produce an audible alarm at concentrations that are harmful but still within the window where you can take effective action. That last point matters enormously. An alarm at low concentration while you are fully functional is a completely different situation from trying to recognize and respond to a problem after your cognition is already degraded. A note on detector types. You may have a carbon monoxide detector in your home. Some pilots have asked whether a home unit would work in the cockpit. The general answer is yes, with one important caveat. Home detectors are calibrated to alarm at concentrations designed to protect sleeping adults over extended exposure periods. They may not alarm at concentrations that are genuinely hazardous during a one-hour flight at altitude, where the physiological effects are amplified. Aviation-specific CO detectors are typically set to alarm at lower concentration thresholds, calibrated for the cockpit environment. The difference in alarm thresholds matters. If you're going to carry a detector, a unit designed specifically for aviation use is worth the modest additional cost. There are also passive badge-style chemical indicators. A compound in the badge changes color in the presence of carbon monoxide. No batteries, no alarm. They require you to check them visually. But they work. They cost a few dollars. And they are meaningfully better than no CO detection at all. The NTSB has recommended requiring carbon monoxide detectors in general aviation aircraft as a regulatory matter. The Federal Aviation Administration has not yet made that a requirement. But the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, the Experimental Aircraft Association, and the FAA's own General Aviation Safety Team have all published the same recommendation independently. The consensus across the safety community is complete. The gap is between knowing about the recommendation and acting on it. If you fly with cabin heat, you should have a CO detector aboard. That's not a preference. It's not a nice to have. It is a clear, consistent position from every major safety authority in general aviation. Now, let's talk about the in-flight response. If your CO detector alarms, or if you notice symptoms consistent with CO exposure, the first priority is removing the source. Turn off the cabin heat immediately. Open the fresh air vents fully. Maximize fresh air circulation in the cockpit. If your aircraft carries supplemental oxygen, use it. Pure oxygen helps displace CO from hemoglobin over time, though it is not an instant reversal. If you or a passenger are experiencing symptoms, declare an emergency. You do not need to be certain of the diagnosis to declare. Uncertainty combined with deteriorating condition is exactly the situation that emergency declaration exists for. Declare, describe your situation to air traffic control, and request vectors to the nearest suitable airport and land. Not at your planned destination, not at a convenient airport an hour further along the route. At the nearest airport where you can land safely, the phrase is as soon as practical. When your judgment may already be compromised, practical means now. There's a seasonal dimension to this threat. Carbon monoxide incidents in general aviation spike during cold weather months. Cold weather increases demand for cabin heat. More heat demand means more airflow over exhaust components. If a crack exists, that increased airflow delivers more CO into the cockpit. And in cold weather, pilots are far less likely to crack a vent for fresh air. Winter is the most dangerous season for CO exposure. And it's precisely when detection matters most. The relationship with aircraft age is also worth understanding. Higher time aircraft have accumulated more thermal cycling on their exhaust components. The physical stress has been building longer. This doesn't mean older aircraft are categorically more dangerous, but it does mean owners and operators of high time airframes should be especially attentive to exhaust system condition between annuals and buyers. Doing pre-purchase inspections should specifically request records on exhaust system work and component replacement history. One more category worth addressing separately. Aircraft equipped with combustion heaters. Some aircraft use independent combustion heaters rather than heat exchanger-based systems. Various heater types have been installed across the general aviation fleet over the decades. These heaters burn fuel directly to produce heat. They have their own combustion chambers and their own potential failure modes. A combustion heater that develops a crack or begins burning fuel incompletely can produce CO directly into the cabin air supply, completely independently of the engine exhaust system. Different source, same hazard. The same detection and maintenance principles apply, and if anything, the onset can be more acute when a combustion heater fails than when a muffler develops a slow crack. Let me close with the broader point. General aviation trains pilots well for emergencies that announce themselves. The engine that quits gives you a sudden change in sound and feel. The vacuum pump failure shows up on the attitude indicator. The pitot heat failure shows up on the airspeed indicator. We train for emergencies that present symptoms you can identify and respond to. Carbon monoxide doesn't announce itself. It makes you a progressively worse pilot without telling you that's happening. The only reliable way to catch it is to have something in the cockpit that detects what your senses cannot. After you install the detector, the cognitive burden is zero. It sits there and works. The cost is comparable to a couple of sectional charts. The accidents in the NTSB's database are not unusual events caused by unusual aircraft in unusual circumstances. They involve airframes like the ones most of us fly, in weather most of us would call routine, on routes most of us have flown. The difference between those accidents and a safe landing is sometimes a cracked muffler found at an annual versus one that wasn't, or a CO detector that alarmed while the pilot could still respond versus a cockpit where no detector existed. Get a CO detector. Put it in the airplane before your next flight. Tell your hangar neighbors to do the same. Sources today include the NTSB Safety Alert Database and Accident Investigation Records, the FAA's General Aviation Safety Publications, and the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association Air Safety Institute. More at radiohangar.com. Stay ahead of it out there. Tower out.